From WBUR Boston, I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today in the key swing state of Pennsylvania, a new voter ID law that requires voters to bring a photo ID to the polls is being challenged in court. In the last 2 years, 11 Republican state legislatures have passed strict voter ID laws. Supporters say it's necessary for election integrity. Opponents call it voter suppression. This hour on Point, the fight over the voter ID, what's behind it, and what's at stake for the election and the nation. You can join the conversation. Is this happening in your state? Do we need to do more to safeguard election integrity? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from New York is Ethan Bronner, National Legal Affairs Correspondent for the New York Times. He has been closely following the debate over voter ID laws. Ethan, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Wade. Good to be here.
Ethan, I hear a lot of anxious and angry Democrats who say that the Republican efforts to purge the rolls in Florida and the voter ID law in Pennsylvania might affect the election, might cost Obama the election. Are they right to be worried?
Well, I think they're right to be worried. I think that, you know, there are several levels to this debate. There seems to be no doubt that these voter ID laws will reduce participation of inner city, minority, especially blacks. And, you know, that could definitely, especially in key states like Pennsylvania, have an effect on whether Obama is reelected. I think that, you know, equally important to the question is whether that's the goal of these laws or whether that's a side effect. And that's, I think, an important part of the debate.
The Republicans say that this is not a partisan purge of likely Democratic voters, but you don't see any Democratic state legislatures passing stricter voter ID requirements.
You don't. That's true. I mean, you know, to be honest, it could be that both sides sort of see the self-interest involved, whatever their motive is. I think that, you know, it's a little harsh to say that the only point of these things is just to suppress voting for Democratic candidates, but that clearly will be the effect. So, you know, there's this whole question also of whether there's some reasonable need for greater identification when you go to vote, like when you get on an airplane or when you do a lot of things in this country today. And then the question is whether, if that's true, this is the way to make it happen so close to such a key election.
Where did this all come from? I mean, it seems to have popped up in Republican states after the 2010 election. And was it organized? How did this happen?
You know, I don't have a very deep answer to that question, and it's a good question. And you're right about the sequencing. It all began a couple of years ago, and some 30 states have passed these laws. Many of them are under challenge, both in terms of their state constitution and by the federal government. We can talk about that more later if you like. But it did all happen. Now, it's clear that it happened in the wake of some voter fraud accusations about Acorn, which organized in poor and minority neighborhoods. And it also occurred when Republicans took over a lot of state houses. So, you know, this is the difficulty, draw one's own conclusions.
Have you had a chance to investigate the evidence of voter fraud, in-person voter fraud, someone showing up at the polls and not voting when they should not be?
Well, I haven't personally done any investigation of it, but those who have say that there's a fairly small amount of it. The Brennan Center at NYU, which is fairly liberal-leaning but nonetheless is serious, you know, did a long study of it and has found that there's very little of it. And even in the state of Pennsylvania, the Department of Commonwealth, as it's called, effectively the Department of State there, has acknowledged that there is no evidence of any in-person voter fraud in Pennsylvania. But it's also true, to be honest, that, you know, just because there isn't doesn't mean there wouldn't be. And as a general matter, the idea of making sure that there's voter integrity and that people who come to the polls are who they say they are makes sense. There is, after all, a kind of Tammany Hall history at various points in American history of people cheating in polls, right?
I, when I'm not sitting here in this chair talking to you, I cover Texas, and where voter ID is a very heated topic.
Mm-hmm.
And the estimates of who might be affected is also, you know, a part of the debate.
Of course.
Hundreds of thousands of people are you know, may be affected. They've even gone over, you know, the estimates even go over a million. But that in itself is a big part of this debate.
You're absolutely right. I mean, one of the difficulties in all of these very, very intense emotional debates is not just what does it mean, but what are the facts we're debating? You're right about Texas. Look at Pennsylvania, where the case is beginning today in Harrisburg. Originally, the state said that 99% of the people in the state had the appropriate ID to vote, and then they did their own data analysis and found that there could be up to 10% or so, 9% of the population that doesn't, although it's very hard to know. What they know is 9% of the people in Pennsylvania don't have a Department of Transportation ID or driver's license. Now, some of those people may not no longer be in Pennsylvania. Some of them may have student IDs, military IDs, but it is a very, very significant question. And I think the point is also that, you know, we don't exactly have an overwhelming participation at the voting booths in this country. The idea of reducing that number seems very distressing. And, of course, race is the third rail of American politics. And here we have an election with the first African-American president seeking re-election, a time where African-American participation in the polls seems quite central to what's going on, and this is happening. So it's a very intense moment.
Joining me now from Washington is Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow and manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative think tank at the Heritage Foundation. His forthcoming book is Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. Hans, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about the Republican point of view in this, which is that the election integrity has to be safeguarded here.
Well, yeah, but I need to point out there are so many fallacies in what you all were just talking about. First of all, Rhode Island passed a voter ID law. That is a democratically controlled state, and it was sponsored by an African-American Democratic state senator. The state of Kansas passed a voter ID law. A majority of the Democrats in both state houses voted for it. So while, yeah, you know, most of these have been passed by Republican legislatures, other Democrats have also done this. Second, this constant claim, and I heard it from Ethan, that this is going to suppress the vote. We know that is not true. And how do we know? Because the photo ID laws of Georgia and Indiana have been in place now for more than 5 years. The Indiana case went to the United States Supreme Court. They upheld the law. Those laws have been in place for two federal elections, numerous local elections, and the actual election turnout data from those states, particularly Georgia, which has a large African-American population, a growing Hispanic population, show that it did not suppress the vote of either blacks or Hispanics. And the turnout data shows that. And on the issue of people not having an ID, Georgia has the data available on the individuals who have applied to get a free ID. Out of 6 million voters, registered voters, the average number of people applying every year has been less than 0.05%.
Now, in Texas, the Justice Department used the state's own estimates to come up with these numbers that indeed hundreds of thousands of potential voters could be affected. What do you make of that?
Well, their experts were demolished on the stand in the trial that took place in Washington. It turned out that the expert the DOJ hired admitted that DOJ would not give him access to federal databases so that he could determine if people had either passports, military IDs, which all count under the Texas law, and would not let him have access to DHS databases so they could find if there were people who were not citizens who registered to vote. He also did not take off the more than 50,000 people who were dead who were on the rolls, and the DOJ's list was so bad that they had people like former President George Bush, Kay Bailey Hutchison on the list. They even had the Texas Director of Elections on their list as supposedly not having a photo ID. He was on the witness stand in Washington, and he pulled out his wallet to show that he actually had a driver's license. By the time they were finished with this expert, The estimate that they had was only that about 1% of registered voters might not have an ID, but without access to the federal databases, they couldn't even tell whether those people might have other ID.
But the justices did express concern.
Well, they did, but I would point out that the ACLU sued over Georgia's law 5 years ago. They made the exact same claims that they're making in Pennsylvania, that there were hundreds of thousands of Georgians without photo ID. Their lawsuit was eventually dismissed. Why? The court noted the fact that they had been unable to produce a single witness in court who would be unable to vote because of the photo ID law. And that's one of the reasons the case was thrown out by the way, a democratically appointed federal judge that was upheld by the 11th Circuit. Same thing happened in Indiana. The courts noted that the plaintiffs had made apocalyptic claims of huge numbers of people without photo ID. They couldn't produce anybody. And in fact, the turnout in Indiana, for example, in the 08 election, which was the first time their photo ID law was in place in a presidential election, the increase in Democratic turnout from the 04 election, when there was no photo ID law, was the largest increase of any state in the country.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about a campaign across the country to pass stricter voter ID laws. Earlier this month, Attorney General Eric Holder spoke at the NAACP annual conference in Houston, Texas, about the importance of protecting the right to vote in the wake of the state of Texas's new photo ID requirement.
In our efforts to protect voting rights and to prevent voting fraud, we will be vigilant and we will be strong. But let me be clear. Let me be very clear. We will not allow political pretexts to disenfranchise American citizens of their most precious right.
We're talking with Ethan Bronner, National Legal Affairs Correspondent for The New York Times, and with Hans von Spakovsky. He's a Senior Legal Fellow and Manager of the Civil Justice Reform Initiative at the Heritage Foundation. And his forthcoming book is Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. Ethan, I wanted to give you a chance to kind of react to what Hans had to say, that it's the Justice Department numbers are wrong and their concerns overstated.
Look, I think that one of the difficulties is that I don't know whether they're overstated and whether they're right. What's clear is that there is some risk here. And if you look, for example, just at what happened in Pennsylvania, you do have this estimate of 1% and then a sudden estimate of 9% by the state authorities and an assertion by the state authorities that they don't really know, A, what level of fraud exists, and B, what kinds of numbers we're talking about of people who will not be able to vote under the circumstances. And Hans said, you know, look, there was an unprecedented number of Democrats and blacks voting in 08. I mean, there was something that happened in 08 in this country apart from voter ID laws. We had the first time a black man ran for president. So, you know, there are other factors at work here. The question is, it is also true that it's not all Republicans. It's 90% Republicans. The question is, what will be the effect? And he asserts categorically that there will be no reduction in voter participation by minorities and by poor people and urban people. That seems to me a hard stand to defend. But look, it's a legitimate prediction. The issue is, what will be the effect? I don't know.
Hans, one of the there are several things that Democrats like to point out. One is that in Texas, the law allows voters who have concealed carry handgun permits to vote, but student IDs, university IDs, you cannot use to vote. Therefore, they think that people who carry handguns are more likely to be Republican. Students who have voter IDs or who have student IDs are most likely to be Democrats, and therefore it's slanted to keep Democrats out.
That is not the reason for that difference. Look, in Georgia, you can use a university ID issued by the state system. The difference between Texas and Georgia is an issue you may recall came up when Rick Perry was running for president, and he was confronted over this. Texas is one of the states that not only allows illegal aliens to in the universities there, but they provide them with in-state tuition. Georgia does not do that. So a college ID in Texas could have been used by somebody who's in the United States illegally to vote. You can't get a concealed carry permit in Texas if you are not in the United States legally. And that's the difference between the two states. Georgia didn't have that problem, and so they allow a student ID. The Pennsylvania law does too. And Pennsylvania, we keep talking about it. Look, they are going to provide a free ID to anyone that doesn't have it. Not only that, but they actually put in a further exemption that says that if you fill out an affidavit that says that you can't afford the supporting documentation needed to get a photo ID, if you can't afford the $5 or $10 it takes to get a birth certificate, you will get to vote and your vote will count. I just don't see how that could be discriminatory.
Do you find the charges of partisanship laughable?
I do. I think what's happening here is that people who are concerned about the integrity of elections want to make sure that we don't have what can happen in elections. And as the Supreme Court said when it upheld Indiana's law, one of the reasons it held it up is it said, look, voter fraud can make the difference in a close election. And we know that is true because there are numerous cases. I detail them in the book that I've written with John Fund, of places where voter fraud overturned an election.
Last month, Pennsylvania GOP House Leader Mike Terzai said that the Pennsylvania voter ID law is, quote, going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, look, you know, I'm a conservative who believes in election integrity, and I don't know why he said that or, you know, the reasons for it. But Pennsylvania needs a statute like this. It's got a long history of voter fraud. In fact, when was the last time you dealt with a state where you had a former congressman, 1998, who was convicted of voter fraud? You know, that's Pennsylvania. They've had many problems with this, and this statute is a way of trying to fix some of those problems.
Let's take a caller. David is calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Wade.
Hello.
Wade, I would like to say that it seems to me in large part that really what's happening here is that the Republicans are attempting to bring their Southern strategy north. They are attempting to disenfranchise those people with whom they disagree. And I'd like to point out something else, too, several things, in fact. Let's look at that Florida law. One of the aspects of that Florida law was the fact that it was designed to prevent people from voting on Sunday before the election. That is a time when a great many African Americans would vote. So this law, these laws, it seems to me, are tailor-made to focus on minorities. Why is it the case, indeed, that these laws have been created only after we have elected our first African-American president? Now, just a few things more, maybe just one more. We should also look at the frame of mind that generated these laws. Time after time after time, our system, it seems to me particularly Republicans, but it's also Democrats, tends to focus, as Chris Hayes says, on those with less power and demand accountability of them. Why do we not demand the kind of accountability that we are demanding of everyday people from those in higher positions? It seems to me that instead of trying to suppress the vote, that the Republicans and the Democrats would get out and do everything they could to increase the vote.
Thank you, David. I'm going to take another caller. Linda is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hello, Linda.
Hi, Wade. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
You know, I just want to make a comment. First of all, there's no voter fraud. And this is these states, and 90% of this is the Republican. We've already stated that. And, you know, they're constantly complaining about deficits and spending money. And yet, how many millions of dollars are these states spending at a time when we don't have any money on a manufactured maybe could be someday in the future a voter fraud, one person walking in that doesn't belong there. And how much money are these states spending on this situation that could be used on so many other things that we need right now? You know, it's not, oh, we have this massive problem. There is no problem. It's a maybe, could be someday.
Thank you.
So why are we spending all of this money that we don't have?
Thank you, Linda. I'm going to bring in another guest now. Joining me from New York is Lawrence Norden. He's the deputy director of the Brennan Center's Democracy Program at New York University School of Law. Last week, the Brennan Center published a new report, The Challenge of Obtaining Voter Identification. Welcome, Lawrence Norden.
Hi, Wade. Thanks for having me on.
Larry, why don't you weigh in here and on the conversation and tell me what you think.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to echo a couple of the comments from your callers. It's important to have some context here about these ID laws. They are part of a wave of restrictive laws that have passed around the country in the past year and a half, since the 2010 election. 19 states have passed restrictive laws. Some of them have been requirements to provide a specific kind of government-issued photo ID in order to be able to vote. Some of them have been new restrictions on groups that have made on allowing groups like the League of Women Voters to register voters. Some of them, as your caller mentioned, have been restrictions on early voting, eliminating early voting on Sunday, a day when African Americans and Latinos have disproportionately voted. I should say groups like the League of Women Voters do disproportionately register blacks and Hispanics. So I think it's important to see all of that context. Of course, we can all agree that ineligible people shouldn't vote, but we should also agree that states should not be passing laws that keep eligible people from exercising their right to vote. When we talk about voter ID, the problem isn't, and I think some of this is in the vocabulary, the problem isn't voter ID laws per se. Hans mentioned that Rhode Island passed a voter ID law. Nobody is challenging that law in court. They're challenging the laws that make it impossible for certain people to vote or extremely difficult. We know virtually every independent study that has looked at this has said about 10% of Americans do not have the kind of ID that are required in these laws. And we can look at a state like Texas. Texas already had a voter ID law. They passed a new one. And I should say, Texas hasn't been able to point to any, like Pennsylvania, any in-person voter fraud under that old law. But they decided to pass a new one that no longer will accept things like state government employee IDs and other kinds of IDs that more people had. Although, as you mentioned, they do still allow gun permits for people to vote. And this has a real practical effect on actual people. And one of the stories I tell is about a man named Jose Zuniga, who is 83 years old. He's voted for decades in Texas, including under their previous ID law. He can't vote anymore. He's in a wheelchair. He's 83. He lives 20 miles from the nearest ID issuing office. He'll have to take three buses to get to an ID office if he wants to get an ID. And, that's what these laws are about, and that's the kinds of people, unfortunately, that these laws are going to disenfranchise. And we should integrity in our elections is important, but we should find a way to make sure that every eligible American can vote. Our system should be free, it should be fair, and it should be accessible. And these laws do not make sure that that is true.
There are a lot of people who are calling in. This is obviously a subject that people care about. Let's go to Esther. She's calling from Jackson, Georgia. Hello, Esther.
Hi, Wade. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. I was just calling in to say that I volunteer locally at a food pantry. That food pantry, obviously, as you can expect, the clients are poor or hard on their luck, and they it's sort of 50-50 white and then people of color. And we require for them to get a bag of grocery, one bag of grocery per month, that they have two forms of ID. One is photo photo ID, and the other is their Social Security card. I didn't make the rules, but those are the rules. And no, we generally, 99% of the cases, we don't have any problem with those people producing it. So my question is, I mean, if we can, I mean, and I live in Georgia, in a small town in Georgia, and my question is, if we require that for our clients and they have a problem producing it, why can't we have some kind of form of, you know, protection of our democracy by requiring that also? I mean, some kind of ID. I don't see how it could be seen as far-fetched to require that.
Bronner, Ethan, she's saying it's really not that big a deal.
Look, you know, I mean, you might want to ask Larry. I mean, I'm not bringing the case against this. I'm sort of observing it from the side about both. I think she has a point. The issue really is that, in a certain way, I think voter participation has not been high in this country. It's an issue that we want to encourage. And in these months before a significant election, to suddenly impose new conditions that might be quite difficult to meet for a number of people. The man he talked about in Texas is one. In Pennsylvania, in this case that's being heard in Harrisburg today, there are about a dozen people who are going to go on the stand who have similar problems. Elderly people whose names have changed, who live far away from voter ID places, and so on. There are clear reasons to worry about it. Just as I think there is a legitimate desire to make sure that a person casting his or her vote is who he or she says he is.
Hans, the Republicans will say in protecting the integrity of the election, you know, even if we get one or two or 10 people who vote when they shouldn't be, it's corrupting the election. On the other side, the Democrats say tens of thousands of people could be kept from voting when they should be.
Well, they keep saying that, but they couldn't produce a single witness in the Georgia case, which is why the case got dismissed. They couldn't produce a single witness in the Indiana case. And in the Texas case a week ago, after scouring the state of Texas for some witness who would say they wouldn't be able to vote because of the ID requirement, the only witness the DOJ could produce was an 18-year-old college student who said that she didn't have time to go get an ID, even though she admitted she had the documents needed to do it. And she said her parents didn't have a car, so they couldn't take her to get it. She managed, however, to get herself from her house to the airport in San Antonio, fly 1,500 miles to Baltimore, take the train down to Washington, and then go testify that she didn't have time to get a vote. For the lady from Georgia, she's absolutely right. You cannot apply. You know, there's this. People keep saying they're concerned about the poor not being able to meet this requirement. Look, if you want to apply for welfare benefits, food stamps, anything like this, I suggest you check the websites of the states who administer these federal programs. You'll find that you need a photo ID to do it. And to give you just another quick example of this, look, we have this lawsuit going on in Pennsylvania over a fundamental right, the right to vote. And people say, well, you shouldn't have to show an ID to do that. Well, I suggest you go to the Philadelphia website and see what you have to do to get a marriage license, which I'm sure the guests would agree with what the Supreme Court said in Loving versus Virginia in 67 is a fundamental right. You need more ID to get a marriage license, including a photo ID and other ID, than you will need to vote in the state.
This is On Point. I'm Wade Goodwin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about a campaign across the country to pass stricter voter ID laws. Pennsylvania Republican House Majority Leader Mike Terzai explained in June during a committee meeting his vision of why they passed a voter ID law.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
Hans, we've done, for most of our country's history, we've done without voter ID laws. Why now?
Well, I think people are concerned about very close elections having been decided in recent years, including a presidential election in 2000 decided by, 537 votes. And we're one of the only Western democracies that does not uniformly require a photo ID. Look, Mexico in the 1990s put in a very strict photo ID requirement. I mean, not only do you have to have a photo ID, they even put people's thumbprint on them. I'm not suggesting we do that here, but the point is Mexico, which has a much larger population in poverty than we do, put in a photo ID requirement to vote. Many people credit that with the fact for, as you know, the first time in 60 years, they actually had a presidential candidate elected from the opposition party. They've been able to do it without any problems. The Georgia and Indiana laws have been in place for 5 years with no problems, no indications that anyone is having any problems voting there. And, you know, I frankly think 5 or 10 years from now, we're going to be looking back on this going, what, why was everybody so upset? You know, the laws by then will have been in place for quite a while. They will have helped to increase the security of elections, and there will have been really no evidence of any major issues or problems with them.
Larry, are we going to look back and say, no big deal?
You know, that I wish that were the case. And, you know, certainly we should be doing everything we can to get people ID, but we know for a fact that there are probably about 20 million Americans who don't have these kinds of IDs.
We do not know groups that
like
for a fact.
I think groups
that is,
like the
that
League of Women Voters.
True.
Hans, you had your chance to talk. If you could just let me finish, please. I think there are a lot of groups like the League of Women Voters and other groups that are working to try to help people get IDs. But some of these people are not going to be able to get IDs. Some of the people like Jose Zuniga, like Viviette Applewhite, who Ethan talked about in his article in the New York Times, whose purse was stolen, and the state is telling her they can't find her birth certificate. They may not be able to get IDs. And, you know, when Hans is talking about Mexico, in Mexico they made it much easier for people to get IDs. You could have two people verify who you were and that you're a citizen, and you would be able to get ID. These laws aren't allowing people to do things like that. And that really is, I think, the issue here. People hear voter ID. They hear people like Hans talk about ID, and it sounds reasonable. But the question is, what are we really saying when we're requiring people ID? What are the restrictions? How difficult are we making it for people to get those IDs? What kinds of IDs are we allowing? And in the states that are the most restrictive, we're not giving people who don't have those IDs the options to find some ways to verify who they are so that they can vote. And that's really what the problem is. I should say, you know, if what we're concerned about is fraud, there's so much that we could do that wouldn't involve disenfranchising people that we should be focused on. We could modernize our voter registration system so that, you know, when somebody moves, they're taken off the rolls and put on to the new location where they move. When somebody passes away, they're taken off the rolls immediately so that we have clean, accurate rolls. We could add lots of people to the rolls in doing that, have participation by millions of more people. And really, I think that's what we should be looking to. We should be looking to find a way not to make it more difficult for people to vote, but to ensure that certainly that there is integrity in our system, but also, frankly, that we as a country are doing our job to make sure that the system works for everybody.
I saw a political cartoon last week, and it showed a policeman holding up his hand to a single voter who was trying to come to the polls who didn't have his ID, but a banker who had bags of money over his shoulder who wanted to buy the election could do so anonymously. I think for Democrats, that cartoon crystallizes their anxiety, Ethan.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. There is a class issue here. One other thing I'd like to say is that when Hans said that other countries have much stricter voter ID laws, he's right. But, I mean, one of the things about the United States is that it has resisted from the beginning the idea of a national identification card. And, you know, this goes back to the frontier mentality, to a kind of libertarian mistrust of government and so on. We can complain about it. We can praise it, whatever. We're also a federal system. So it's a very messy overlay of issues that have created the circumstances we're in. In addition, of course, to the very complicated relationship between whites and non-whites over the years here. And suddenly we have all of these laws in the last 2 years. And whatever their motive, their impact, it seems to me, or their likely impact, is a source of concern for liberals and for Democrats, and one can understand that.
I'm going to take another caller here. Alonzo is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Alonzo, hello.
Hi, Wade. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much. I'm doing fine.
All right. I just want to take another position and another look at it from another angle. One, it doesn't strike anybody as very weird that this is 2012 and we are actually still fighting the same fight that we were 50 and 60 years ago. And so basically it's almost like we want to convince ourselves that America has hit a reset button when all we've done, in fact, is just reframe the argument, you know, because ultimately, 50 and 60 years ago, it was the argument was very much entrenched in keeping people from having using the influence of a vote that other people did not believe were viable enough.
You're talking about registering blacks to vote?
Well, yeah. I mean that was real. That's a part of American history. And so what's really funny is we're having the same discourse right now. We're just reframing it in a different way. Now, here's something that really kind of sticks out with this, is that if this was so important, which right now we can say that it is 90%, these Republican-run states, governors, and so forth, are doing this. This is so important to the integrity of the voting system, to America, its democracy, and so forth. In the 8 years that George Bush was in office, this was not a battle cry, really. Now, they tried to do something with Acorn, of course, but that was kind of silly because that was all attached to the more money a poor person could make. Income was tied to how many people could be registered. It wasn't about voter fraud more than it was somebody trying to make income.
Okay, thank you, Alonzo. Let me take another caller. Connie is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Connie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Wade. I'm just outraged and quite insulted that anyone would think that I can't vote because I can't get the proper documentations. Personally, I vote by mail, and I have done for many years. And I just think it's very ironic that when people go down to social services, to apply for social services, you don't hear anyone outraged or complaining about the fact that you don't have the proper ID documents. I think this is just, this disenfranchised issue is just manufactured when politicians are afraid of losing a campaign. In the black community, people are not, they're not talking about the fact that they don't have documents. They have the documents. And I think it's just insulting for anybody to think we can't do that. And I don't like to be used in that fashion.
Connie, thank you. Let's take another caller. Brendan is calling from Belchertown, Massachusetts. Brendan, hello.
Hi, Wade. I'm just put off by the fact that there's so much, you know, we talk about voting integrity, making sure of foreigners, illegal immigrants don't vote. But again, on the other end, we're not paying any attention to the campaign contributions. Those are anonymous. Corporations can give. Corporations are all international, which means there's an opportunity for tremendous foreign influence on our elections, and nobody cares. That can be done completely anonymously. The Republicans are protecting this right of perhaps billions of dollars affecting the elections, and we have no idea where that money came from. And that, so I find this sort of backwards. If we're going to pay attention to the vote, to this detail, how come we're letting the contributions be so totally anonymous?
Hans, I guess we're talking about issues of class here. I wanted to let you respond to this.
Well, since I used to be on the Federal Election Commission, which had to do with campaign finance laws, I have to say that statement about corporations is wrong. Corporations cannot contribute directly to any kind of federal candidates. And in fact, foreign corporations are barred, not just by federal law, but by FEC regulations, which are actually very strictly enforced. From not only they can't contribute to candidates either, they also can't engage in any independent political expenditures in this country.
But if I'm a billionaire, I can give anonymously.
You can't give anonymously to candidates running for office. All contributions.
But I can give anonymously to Karl Rove, who will help Mitt Romney.
Well, you can spend that money just like any other American can on your own, independent expenditure. If you want to buy an ad in the New York Times that says, please vote for Barack Obama in the upcoming election, are you telling me that you should not be able to do that, that the government should ban you from that engaging that kind of political speech?
No. My question is, there's concern that rich people can influence the election anonymously through large campaign large contributions to PACs, while voters have to show ID just to be able to vote. That's a point of view.
If you contribute to a political action committee, that has to be reported by the PAC to the FEC, and it's done every day. So this idea that there's these huge numbers of anonymous contributions is just wrong. Anybody that doubts that, go to the FEC website, look up any PAC you want to, look up individuals. If you want to find out how much they've contributed to who, you can find it right away on the FEC website.
Ethan?
Yes. The question is whether I think that there is this problem.
Well, I mean, I just wanted to give you a chance to weigh in.
No, I mean, I'm not convinced that the campaign contribution question and voter participation, I mean, obviously they both have to do with the election. I'm not sure that they're a useful intersection of discussion right now. I mean, we do, broadly, there is a concern that wealthy people have more power. That's part of what it means to be wealthy, and particularly in an election process that's egregious and upsetting. And, you know, the issue of whether campaign contributions from corporations is appropriate or not, the Supreme Court settled that. People are still very upset about it, but that's the story. I think that the issue we're facing today in this discussion is less about that than about whether these voter ID laws are being handled properly. And to me, I would sum it up by saying everyone can understand the need to make sure that the person going to the voting booth is who he says he is. The question is the way it's happening in all these states right now the most efficient and fairest way? And I think there are very serious questions about that.
Larry, how about you?
Well, I do want to pick up on this point. Look, decisions by the Supreme Court over the past few years have opened our political system to a flood of money. There is no question about that. And there's also no question that if people want to find ways of contributing anonymously through shell corporations and others, that they're going to find a way to PACs and through independent expenditures to get that money in, and it can be very difficult to know where money is coming from in political campaigns. And I do think that's the law of the land. That's the Supreme Court rulings. There we do have, I hope, an opportunity to counteract that with increasing more participation from all citizens, to get all citizens on the rolls and ensure that all citizens can vote. Citizens and government both have responsibilities. Americans have the responsibility to register and vote, but it is the government's responsibility to make sure that voting is effective, free, fair, and accessible to all. And again, I think if we modernize our registration system, use the computers and databases that we have that exist right now, we can get millions of more people onto the rolls, and that's the best answer.
I want to get another caller in. Lee is calling from Hollywood, South Carolina. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Wade. I just wanted to say the opportunity is there. If the opportunity was there when the person went to the polls to vote and they didn't have a picture ID, they just get it done right there. Same time they go to vote. It takes 10 minutes. I had to get my picture ID so I could vote in this last election. Took me 10 minutes. Filled out a piece of paper, got my picture taken, and had my ID.
Hans, what about that idea?
Well, no, I think that's not a bad way of handling this. But look, I want to go back to something earlier, which is, you know, people keep talking. One of your callers kept saying, vote suppression, all right? Look, the data in Georgia shows that in the 2008 election, black turnout went up 42%. From the 2004 election. Now, Ethan said these are the official numbers from the Secretary of State's office. In the 2010 election, the turnout of black voters went up over 44%. So this idea that this is intended to or will prevent, for example, African Americans from voting at the polls is simply not the case. And to keep claiming it's vote suppression, well, you know, if it's vote suppression, then NPR needs to change its rules, because I couldn't get into the studio I'm talking from without showing a government-issued photo ID.
Larry,
if I could just make a quick point here.
It'll have to be
Hans
quick.
Keeps talking about Hans keeps talking about Georgia. But if lots of things influence turnout. If you look at a neighboring state like North Carolina that has a similar population, they had greater increase in their black turnout and their Hispanic turnout, and they didn't have an ID law. That's the point of comparison you should make, not if more people were voting in 2008 when Barack Obama was running for president. We had a very close election, and Georgia was a contested state.
Georgia had the second largest increase in the country. He's correct that North Carolina had a larger increase. It was the only state in the country that had a larger increase. Georgia had a larger increase than many, many other states without photo ID population. The increase in Georgia was larger than the census shows. There was an increase in the black population in the state.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for a very lively conversation. Much appreciated. Ethan Bronner from the New York Times, Hans van Spakovsky from the Heritage Foundation, and Lawrence Norden from the Brennan Center at NYU School of Law. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Wade Goodwin, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.